Welcome, Julian, to Adelaide Chronicles. Adelaide Chronicles is a podcasting platform that's all about sustainability and inclusive futures. And I'm loving the fact that you're willing to come to Adelaide technologically and talk about your beautiful book. And I must say, first off, too, that this recording is being done on unceded Kaurna land, being the traditional home of the Adelaide Plains people. Your book, it is amazing.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
I don't really want to say anything about it. I want to hear from you. If you just start off about the genesis of the book.
Sure. So 2020 was, you know, an exceedingly difficult time for everyone around the world. And definitely Guam was not spared in that regard. Guam was, you know, going through a lot, this community. There was, I guess you could say that the pandemic really sort of laid bare all of the sort of longstanding historical but unresolved issues surrounding our colonization and also the constant militarization of the island by the United States. And so there was just a lot happening in addition to the pandemic. And so I really kind of felt the need to quite sort of all of that noise, and the only way I could do it was to write. And so I didn't intend at first to write a book. I didn't have really set out with an agenda to do that, but I just wrote because I couldn't not write. And then eventually the book sort of showed itself to me, and I realized what I was doing. You know, I was trying to write a book that encourages a more radical kind of listening, in particular to sort of listen to the, you know, the voices, or sort of elevate the perspectives of those who are most vulnerable, which just led me back to childhood and led me back to sort of my first experiences with grief and with loss. That's what 2021 is as well. This whole year, this whole period that we've been in, it's just one huge sort of like awakening in some ways, and a reckoning with sort of all the unresolved things that sort of haunt what we call the United States. Really systemic racism that's never truly been resolved. And I just started thinking and meditating about all the different situations of peoples who've been so subjugated, you know, who've been so oppressed throughout history by this country. And so I sort of really meditated on reparation. And this book sort of, in some ways, it's not overtly political in that way, but it's very subversive and very political because, I mean, it kind of deploys the feminist insight that the personal is political. So I use stories that are very personal and intimate, like losing my father. Gosh, very personal stories that, you know, grew, like being a child trying to process my grief and what that looks like and sounds like and feels like. And I used all those sort of personal experiences to try to write, draw bigger, or glean some insight that is political, that can be used to understand where we are and how we got here. And so, yeah, I hope that makes sense.
It's very political, but it doesn't hit you on the head. It touches your emotions. That's the beautiful part about it.
Yeah, definitely. We have enough hammers on the head, you know. Yes. And this is not that. This is definitely different. And that's what I mean by radical listening. I think I try to really get closer to the earth so I could figure out a softer, almost more gentler way of sort of prodding people toward uncomfortable truths. That's what I think I was doing. That's what I hope people really get the fact that it really is a labor of love to try to find and shape the language that we need to rescue back our righteous minds. You know, that's what I talk about in the book, rescuing back language, doing language.
Would you do a reading from the book for us?
Sure, I can read. I can read the introduction of the book. It's the introduction that gives the book its title. So this is entitled The Properties of Perpetual Light. The writers I love most are almost always on a mission to save the world one sentence at a time, to redeem us and to rescue back our righteous minds. These writers risk not only the criticism of their peers, as earnestness is said to ruin art, but also the possibility that their words will be mangled and misunderstood. Still, they offer up their gifts, hoping, as the brilliant black feminist Audre Lorde had hoped, that their words can close some of the gap between blindness and our better selves. In other words, these writers do language, but they also do battle. And the battle is on, whether we like it or not, whether we choose to deny it or not. Climate change has put us on an unforgiving timeline. In the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change Special Report on Global Warming of 1.5 degrees Celsius is to be believed. We have about 10 years left to get our collective shit together, curb our emissions, and ensure the future habitability of the Earth. Ensure there is a future. And the questions fall to the soul like dew to the pasture. Where do we go from here? What do we do with our desolation? How obscene is it that communities with the smallest carbon footprint, like low-lying islands and atolls in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, are paying the steepest price for a crisis we had almost no hand in creating? How do warm-blooded longings for equity and justice figure into global discourse dominated by the cold language of mitigation and adaptation? How do we stay sane as well as sentient? As the luminous author activist Naomi Klein puts it, how do we stay human in a warming world? This book, sadly, does not answer any of these questions, not directly anyway. This collection instead attempts to trace the arc of the morally strenuous spirit that drives so many writers to take pen to paper. It is an homage of sorts to the work of the activist writer, which is the work of bearing witness, wrestling with the questions of one's day, telling children the truth. This book collates a wide range of writing penned for various audiences to mark a variety of occasions, from graduations and protests to birthdays and funerals, even an impending nuclear threat. Some of these pieces were not originally intended to be shared, but rather were adapted from old notes and journal entries, written at particularly memorable moments in my life. What connects all of them is not their subject matter, but their spirit, which more than anything else is a spirit of insistence. All of them, in their own way, insist on life, no matter the hour, even at the hour of death. There is a Catholic prayer for the dead that children in Guam learn early on, our parents having dragged us to more rosaries than we can remember. While the prayer is beloved by Catholics everywhere, here we cradle it closer than most, if only because there is just so much death. When a loved one dies, we descend upon a family member's home or the village church to pray for 9 nights. In unison, we say, "Eternal rest grant unto them, O Lord, and let perpetual light shine upon them. May they rest in peace." I have recited these words thousands of times, yet it is only now in compiling this manuscript that I have truly reflected on their meaning. In one of the entries included here, a commencement speech I gave to the graduating class of my former high school, I talk about how reading Paulo Coelho's The Alchemist recalibrated my thinking about what it means to be a self-actualized adult and what it takes to become one. In this speech, I tell the graduates that the only way to successfully make the journey from adolescence to adulthood is to learn how to get quiet. That is, to quiet down the noise of other people's opinions and to take instruction instead from one's own heart. I tell them of a beautiful exchange between the alchemist and the boy after days of traveling the desert, where the alchemist explains that those who are interested only in gold do not understand the secret of alchemy. For lead, copper, and iron all have their own destinies to fulfill, and anyone who interferes with another's destiny will never discover her own. This exchange has stayed with me, like a pressing on the chest. I think I finally know why. In our spiritual lives, as much as our material ones, the same insight applies. In the same way that the earth metals have different properties, so too do their spiritual counterparts, like hope and faith. What is hope, for instance, if not a stubborn chink of light in the dark? What is faith, if not setting out in that same darkness with only our belief in the light to guide us? And what of perpetual light? What are its properties? We know from the Bible that the only thing to ever precede light is love. I think that's it. perpetual light is the ancient beauty. When we recite the prayer for the dead, we are asking God for our loved one's safe passage, and we are offering up the only thing we have, our love, to light their way. This book is a little like that, like a love letter to young people. It seeks to call them forth, to do language and to do battle, to write as if everything they love is on the line, because it is.